And now, live from the Eagle Newsroom in Bryan, it's Aggie Nation, covering Aggie football since the first game in 1894 and every game since. Talking all things A&M and all the pro and high school sports you want to hear. Aggie Nation on Sports Radio 1150, The Zone.
Afternoon. Welcome to Aggie Nation, powered by the Eagle. Aubrey Bloom, Richard Kroom, and we are brought to you by MSC Opus. Check out all the great events coming to the season that dreams are made of at mscopus.org. Information on tickets and all the cool shows coming in. Again, mscopus.org for all that good stuff. You can give us a call, 693-1150, or you can text us, 229-1939. We're about a week away from this is truly busy. Well, we're busy. I'm trying to figure out. I got to learn all about Bryan football now. I know a little bit about it, but if I'm going to be doing on the radio every Friday, I got to learn some more stuff. So I've been in my off hours diving into the Bryan, anything I could find on Bryan, trying to get that stuff. And then we've got our preseason tabs and stuff going on out here. So we're kind of busy, but the sports world isn't busy. All that's happening right now are fights and injuries, and we're going to talk about
fights. Yeah.
We're going to talk about fights later on. But
at least some of the fights now are between guys on different teams.
Well, we're going to get to that. Don't spoil it. We're going to spoiler alert. We got that coming later. But what do y'all want to talk about? 229-1929. About a week away from when we can really start diving into things. We'll have some high school ball to talk about. And then, of course, game week. You've got game week stuff to talk about. What are people doing for tailgating? Where is the party at down in Houston? All that stuff will be coming up here pretty soon. But for now, we're just still in the middle of it, waiting a few more days to see what's going on. So any of y'all's questions, hit us up, 229-1939. We are going to have a lot of different topics today, including the platoon systems in college football. Why can't that work? We're going to have some fight talk later on. A little SEC hoops scheduling talk, perhaps, a little bit later on. And then some more not really X's and O's talk, but there was a good article on ESPN today about drills in football and how they're used and stuff like that. We'll talk about that too. But at first, another practice yesterday, and in one more day, we got to see our first almost great play of the year. You know, I love an almost great play. And I forget where it was. I was in an article I was reading, but they talked about that sometimes you can tell an athlete by the plays they almost make more than the plays they do make, as far as how special of an athlete they are. And I didn't really know what that meant, except I can think of, until I saw it happen with DeAndre Jordan. And he tried to dunk a ball from so far away one time and ended up getting fouled, that the fact that he even thought he might be able to do that was insane. And so we had one of those yesterday. We had an almost play. A wide receiver went right off. He was diving in the end zone, and he didn't quite hold on to it, Kroom. But it was a good almost play. Saw a little bit of Jake Hubnack, because he was running with the second team offense yesterday in practice.
How'd he look?
Yeah, he looked all right. The thing to me, I wonder, and everyone's so caught up in the Kyler-Kyle thing. I wonder if the closer battle's not Kyler and Jake Hubnack to see who's really going to be the backup.
Wow.
I don't know. But the way that they were talking the other day, here's what, and again, this is reading into the tea leaves, but that's all we have right now, is last Friday before the scrimmage, someone in Spavital said they were going to not use Kyle much in the scrimmage and use Kyler and Jake a lot to see how where those two guys are at. To me, that says they're trying to figure out who's better right now of those two. Now, again, that's reading into it quite a bit. They're also both first-year players, so they need more reps and all that kind of stuff.
I was going to say, they know a little bit more about what
Kyle. But to me, that also says You know, it's a long time for the media and it's a long time for fans, but it's only 3 weeks of practice and then you're in it. You got to go play Arizona State, a top 20 team. To me, you're not going to waste reps, you know, just seeing what the backups have. You know, or, to me that says they feel good about what they've gotten, Kyle. Let's see what these other guys have. Is what I'm saying. If they weren't sure that Kyle was going to be the starter, then you'd think he'd be needing as many reps as he could get. But, again, like I said, we're reading into this a little bit, but that's just, you know, one thing. Also,
did you see a redshirt in the way?
No, I don't think so. I think if you redshirt. Kyler won't redshirt. Jake could, I guess. Yeah. But I doubt he would. To me, it wouldn't make sense. I mean, if you're...
Ooh, does he still have? I guess he still has his.
Yeah, I don't know his background too. I don't know if he sat out there and played, or he might have already burned one for all I know. I think he might have been a 3-to-play-3 guy because I think he might have redshirted Oklahoma State or however that worked out. So, again, I don't know the specifics of all that whole thing, but I don't know. To me, that part is a little bit interesting. Other than that, we don't get to see a whole lot. Someone made a field goal yesterday. Taylor Bertolette made a long field goal, so. That was something that we could see out of practice, and everyone's kind of worried about that. And frankly, they probably should be from what we've seen so far.
Was there cheering or just golf claps, or what was there?
You know, the team gets fired up if they put it together. Yeah. So, there you go. Any else questions about practice, you can get us up 229-1939. We can't talk about injuries, but it's interesting to watch. The practice yesterday with the first team defense has Jarrett Johnson as defensive end on one side, and to see kind of where he's at. And they talked about it after practice, and I get my post practices mixed up, but I think last night was when Price was talking, and he's defensive ends. So he's talking about, unlike defensive tackles, where Hagen thinks they're like 6, 7, 8 deep, they're not that deep on the ends. They're maybe 3 deep. And then they immediately...
They got the 2 classy ones, but there's quite a drop-off.
Well, they just don't know what they have after that. You're talking about freshmen getting in the mix. You're talking about guys that haven't played much into the mix. So, but what I say all that to say, because I asked earlier on Twitter, I said, you know, what is everyone talking about? What do y'all want to hear? You know, we're a week out. And someone said, you know, from every report, every conversation, all the way all the coaches talk, someone mentioned the talk about the D-line is giving the offensive line problems and what that could mean for A&M down the road. One thing I think is interesting, and part of why last year, you'll remember in the year before, we all said maybe this defense isn't going to be very good, because every spring, every fall, everything I've ever seen, whether it's A&M, whether it's high schools, whether it's whatever, the defense always starts out quicker. The defense is always ahead early. And it's because it doesn't take as much rhythm to play on defense. There's not a whole lot of, knowing where the other people are going to be is important, but it's not as important.
The offensive line has to work more as a team.
Yeah, and defense works as a team, but it's not as much of that. So defense always starts out ahead. I mean, even years when A&M's defense was going to be horrible, they started out ahead. And so last year, when they didn't start out ahead, it was kind of like, oh man, they might be real bad. So that's why I temper the expectations a little bit based on the reports that the defense is dominating, you know, in practice so far, because that's what should happen early on. And, well, like I said, whether it's high school or whether it's college, the defense should always be ahead of the offense at the beginning, because there's not as much rhythm involved, and they don't have to get gelled up necessarily. They don't have to know exactly how fast each other are to throw the ball or hit the hole and things like that. So, but it's good. I mean, if you're an A&M fan,
I was going to say, if the defense is looking better than A&M's offense,
yeah, that's good to hear.
Feel pretty good about that.
But it's still early. But yeah, it's still they haven't even been in pads a whole week yet. It's still a little early to decide that the defense is going to be, you know, dominating on the field this fall. But like I said, it is good to hear from people, and we've seen it out there at practice. The defensive line, the way they work this year, the up the field stuff, that's not just talk. I mean, it really is. You can see it even in the drills, that the emphasis on the defensive line is different this year. It's less hold guys up and more get through and see what happens. And frankly, I think that plays to A&M's personnel a lot better. I mean, that was one thing we saw last year. You can try to run whatever crazy scheme you want, but if the personnel doesn't fit it, you're going to have some issues, and that's what we've seen. I think A&M's personnel fits this a lot better. So, again, no surprise that the defensive line is looking pretty good. So, there you go. Just a few thoughts from practice yesterday. Kroom, you have any big – you haven't been out there the last couple days, but you have any things you've been hearing or reading or seeing or talking about that people bring up when you're around town?
I haven't been around town the last few days.
Where have you been? In a bunker?
I went to Fredericksburg, remember?
Oh, yeah. Ugh, boo.
Yay.
Nah. They were a big rival in high school.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah, but now they've, like, fallen off the map. They, like, dropped down a division. They're, like, 4A now. Now, well, they went to 3A, and then now they have the whole, like, everything bumped up weird deal.
Yeah.
But yeah, there you go. If y'all have any questions about practice, I'm more than happy to share what we have and haven't seen. We actually did get to hang out a little bit longer yesterday than we have been. We were there for about 30 minutes yesterday.
Oh, that's good.
Got to see a little bit
for a few days there. It was almost nothing.
Yeah, we got to see a few plays. We got to see it's a little bit of individual work. We got to see their attack drill. And I talked about this the first day of practice when you can't see anything. The only thing I said on Twitter afterwards, Justin Dunning is a huge, massive person.
I took note of that the next, because you said that. I took note of that the next one I went to, and
they showed him in the attack drill yesterday, and it was like live on Periscope, if y'all follow all that, but I mean, I was out there, so I didn't know it was on Periscope till later, but that attack drill where they have to run through the three guys and get to the dummy that's back there, you have to like hit the dummy. Mm-hmm. He just threw all three guys down. It was pretty impressive, but I still wonder if you can play safety at 6'4", whatever he is. But one thing's for sure, he's a powerful dude. That was pretty impressive yesterday. So there you go.
Maybe against a team like Arkansas that runs a little bit.
Yeah, well, he could definitely play an in-the-box safety. Mm-hmm. I mean, that essentially you could sort of I don't want to dive into what they could and couldn't do because, frankly, I haven't seen him play that much. He might be fine as a normal safety. But you would think at his height and weight, you could almost play – you know, they have that Mustang package where they have an in-the-box defensive back. It's kind of what LSU did with Tyrann Mathieu at times.
Not much similarity in size there, though.
No, but he was an in-the-box defensive back. He was in run support, and he wasn't just in pass coverage. But they did it a little bit with him. You can maybe do it with that. Essentially, you're in a 5-DB package, but if you have a DB that's the size of a linebacker, then, I mean, you're basically still in a 4-3. So, I don't know. We'll see how they use him or if they even use him this year. They got quite a few people back there at safety. But that was just one thing I noticed yesterday.
Did you just
also
say they got quite a few people back there at safety?
Yeah. They don't have anyone at corner. They have all kinds of safeties, though.
Yeah. But we haven't heard that too many times over the last, past few years.
Well, I didn't say they had a lot of great people back at safety. They're still starting a first year. We're still expecting to be starting a first year JUCO player back there.
You wouldn't have heard that before.
But they do have a lot of bodies at safety, is what I meant to say. I don't know how the quality is going to be, but we'll find out. All right, but anyway, that's a little bit of practice talk, just stuff we noticed out there yesterday. Hit us up if you have any other questions. We'll go to break, and when we come back, I want to talk about this because ESPN did a really good story today, I thought, on the Oklahoma drill. And everyone that knows football knows what I'm talking about when I say the Oklahoma drill. If not, I'll explain it when we come back. But and kind of where it fits in the modern, you know, what we think of in football, the problems with football that it's been facing and all that kind of stuff. I thought it was pretty fascinating, and I'm interested to get your thoughts on that, Kroom, and then y'all's thoughts out there as well. So come back, we'll talk about that. It's Aggie Nation, powered by the Eagle, here on Sports Radio 1150 in the Zone FM 102.7.
There is so much happening in Aggie football this fall, you need to be attending the best live show around to stay up to date and on top of all things Aggie football. It happens every Monday and Thursday from noon till 1 at the Tap, and it's called the Belucci Hour. Get recruiting insight from Billy Lucci and Bryce Jones of Texags Radio every week, twice a week this fall. Plus, enjoy the Tap's delicious $7.99 lunch specials with all the bells and whistles. Make the Belucci Hour lunch a part of your week every Monday and Thursday from noon till 1.
At Schlitterbahn, there's so much for my family to do. We need a checklist. Miles of slides, rivers, and waves? Check. Plus, Schlitterbahn welcomes picnics and has free parking and tubes. Estimated savings of $100? Check. We also love how we can float the day away and enjoy so much family fun together. Packing our summer with amazing memories? Definitely check. Hold on to every moment at Schlitterbahn.
Get discounted tickets and plan your stay at Schlitterbahn.com.
Hot is here. What did you expect in the Brazos Valley in August? But Rattlers has great food and drink specials to fill you up and quench your thirst. Check out these great specials. Jimmy Dean Blazing Hot Sandwich and any size fountain drink or coffee, only $2. Or a fully loaded ballpark hot dog, only $1 with your registered Rattlers Rewards card. Be sure to stop by after work for an 18-pack of ice-cold beer from the fine families of beer from Bud, Miller, and Coors, only $15.99. Rattlers. Friendly, clean, Texan.
Summer is here, so it must be Harvest Festival time. Make plans now to join the Messina-Hoff Winery family every weekend in August for the 38th annual Harvest Festival. Enjoy grape picking, traditional grape stomping, wine and food pairings, specialty dinners, and so much more. Messina-Hoff's estate winery is located at 4545 Old Reliance Road in Bryan. That's the 38th annual Harvest Festival at Messina-Hoff Winery and Resort. Get all your Harvest Festival information online at messinahoff.com/harvest.
Texans are teaming up to reduce teen pregnancy.
We're teaming up by starting the conversation.
We're teaming up to educate our community.
We're teaming up to mobilize a coalition.
When it comes to reducing teen pregnancy in our communities,
we're teaming up to make a difference.
OurTownForTeens.org is helping communities all over Texas reduce teen pregnancy by putting the resources you need at your fingertips. OurTownForTeens.org. Team up. We can do this.
Hi, Gabe Bach here from TexAgs Radio. And if you're not currently a premium or varsity level subscriber to TexAgs.com, what are you waiting for? TexAgs.com is the inside source for all things Aggie sports, the leaders in breaking news coverage, in-depth analysis, recruiting scoop, and more. Whether it's exclusive long-form interviews with Aggie players and coaches or insight on the next big recruit on his way to Aggieland, nobody covers A&M like TexAgs. Jump on board now and don't miss out on the very best in A&M sports coverage. It's TexAgs.com.
Meet our mascot of the week and hear how you can help Long Way Home Adoptables. Listen in each Wednesday at 12:50 to the Louis Bellina Show, powered by teamofnavasota.com.
Nation, powered by the Eagle, Auburn Blue, and Richard Krum. I got sidetracked during the break because I just saw that someone had Arkansas at 13th on their AP ballot. Good grief.
The only thing would have been worse if they put Tennessee there, huh?
They had Tennessee 25th, so they're still ranked. Whatever. Arkansas is not the 13th best team in the country.
Well,
they
just lost a running back.
This is one of those, we talked about this a little bit, and I got to give credit out to Catarano on Twitter, was the first one that said, was mentioning it. I was looking up something about A&M and just happened to notice. In SEC games only, do you know where Arkansas ranked last year in yards per carry?
Yards per carry?
Yeah, yards per carry. In SEC games only.
Among 14. You're talking about not the West.
Yeah. Yards per carry.
Okay, well, since you asked that question, I'm going to say sixth.
Ninth.
Okay.
Ninth in rushing. They were also ninth in yards per game rushing. Like, everyone's made them out to be some sort of unstoppable blitzkrieg on offense. And they weren't even average. They were below average in running the ball. Even non-SEC games included, they were fifth. For steamrolling, whatever, I mean, Texas and whatever other crap teams they played last year. Texas Tech. And then I assume two Sisters of the Poor. So, I mean, it's crazy. They were just barely better at running the ball than A&M was, which is saying something because A&M couldn't run it at all. So, they were closer to being A&M than they were to being Auburn, is what I'm saying on this run thing. But
average-wise, you got to remember that teams go in there to stop Arkansas.
Sure. Right? Yeah.
Whereas when teams
but that's
come here
still the
to
thing
play A&M,
that they do.
That's not their main part.
Well, that's why you got to use both stats. Yards per game and yards per carry. They were ninth in both, which is awful. if that's the thing that your offense is based on. So, again, I don't know. I'm just I get annoyed at the Arkansas hype. Nothing annoys me more than all the hype for Arkansas. Other than maybe that this is the best team Baylor's ever fielded talk. That's been – I read a thing about that today, too. And I was like, let's tap the brakes a little bit.
Yeah.
Because, well, last year's Baylor team was pretty good. And
right.
you,
well, I mean, they,
you don't
a couple
just,
years back when they
you don't just lose your quarterback and become better always. Now, if they do, maybe they do. Maybe Seth Russell's the is that his name? Seth Russell. Maybe he's the greatest quarterback Baylor's ever had. But I don't know. That was annoying me a little bit too. All right. Anyway, ESPN did a thing today about the Oklahoma drill, which I thought was really fascinating and frankly a little alarming. That and here, let me, if you don't know what I'm talking about, it's the drill where you have two guys across from each other and you've got a ball carrier, and it's basically like it's like if you were playing football in a hallway.
Yeah,
it's a
how tough are you drill.
Yeah, and that's the whole point of it. It's a how tough are you drill. But ESPN did a good look into the origin of it, how it started way back in the 50s with the coach at Oklahoma, or maybe it was even the 40s, and where it went from there and all this kind of stuff. But it brought up an interesting point of how this is one of the, like, rites of passage of football is the Oklahoma drill. And there's some anecdotes about there's a small town where the kids in their, like, local Pop Warner League or whatever have an Oklahoma drill, like, night where they all come out and do it. And then, you know, they talk about high schools and then colleges. Specifically, the story focuses on Blake Bell. He was doing it as a tight end at Oklahoma last season after, you know, playing as a
quarterback for...
Yeah, playing as a quarterback for all these years and how he wasn't going to be a real football player until he took part in that drill and all that kind of stuff. But it's a fascinating look, and that's this week's required reading is the if you go to ESPN's college football page, it's on there.
Macho Man drill.
Yeah, and I thought it was a good look, though, because what it talks about is this is a drill that everyone seems to think it's important, you know, that they quote Bob Stoops and John Harbaugh, whichever one's the coach of Michigan, and all these different guys that say, you know, this is a drill that's really important. It's about knowing who wants to get in there and fight and all this kind of stuff. But then they go talk about how they don't use it in the NFL. There's a couple teams that still do in the NFL, but most teams don't.
But by the time they're at the NFL, people, I think that, like, well, let me go back to say this. Sumlin talked about it the other day in his press conference. You know, when you get the pads on, then you see some guys fade away. You see some guys, you know, get excited and you know, step forward. And I think this is a drill where they use that to see, you know, how tough they'll be, whether or not they'll just kind of back away, oh, it's not for me type thing. Well, if you're in the NFL, you've already proven that you are tough enough by going through your, you know, what you did in college. So I can see why it wouldn't be done in the NFL.
But haven't you proven that in college? I mean, if you get to college, you were obviously proved it in high school.
No, because in high school, like you said, I mean, some of those guys in high school never faced a guy that, you know, weighed within 20 pounds of them.
That we're not talking about the
five
guys
stars
that came
and never
from...
saw four, never even saw a four star across from them.
See, to me though, it's interesting the duality of kind of what they talk about in the story. The level where it would tell you the most, which is when kids are younger, how bad do they actually want to hit somebody? How much is their heart really into it? Because that's what they're talking about. That's what this drill is about. This, you know, I forget which quote they quoted, but it said basically, if you get in there and mix it up, this drill will tell you if you love football or if you should be finding out something else you should be doing. The age where it could help you the most is also the age where it hurts kids the most. They were talking about players actually getting hurt in this drill. And I thought it was a fascinating read about kind of the future of football as more and more people go away from it. I remember my dad used to talk about when he played, they had what they call the bull in the ring drill, and everyone calls each drill something different or whatever. But essentially, someone stood in the middle of a circle, and players would, the coach would walk around the circle and tap a player on the back, and he'd run out and hit the guy in the middle, and you had to kind of keep your head on a swivel and see who was coming and kind of get the guy off before he could really hit you. But obviously that drill involved a lot of people taking shots in the back. So essentially they outlawed that drill even when I was in middle school, we did it like once or twice, and then they were like, no, you can't. That's like against the rules. You can't do that one anymore. But it's like I said, it's interesting to see these things. And the fact that there's little kids doing this drill, I couldn't believe. Because there's a way to do it and have the same principle, but a lot safer. They were talking about the fact that the only thing that makes this one that dangerous is the running back running through, because he's got distance between him. If I am a foot away from you and we're hitting each other like a board drill, right, we're not going to concuss each other. There's just not enough speed built up to do that. Now, you could obviously hurt somebody, but you're not going to like give anyone a concussion in a board drill unless you pick them up and throw them on their head, in which case you probably shouldn't have been up against that person anyway. But there was somehow this drill, it's not that, because you have people with a head start. They were talking about sometimes coaches will get the players further and further apart to increase the collision and all that kind of stuff. So it's interesting.
That seems kind of silly, because essentially if you got two linemen, I mean, they're never that going to be that far apart in the first place.
Well, that's kind of the whole point. I mean, a receiver and DBs and running backs are never going to have to block anyone like that anyway. So I don't know. Like I said, it was just a good read about where do some of these things that are so considered part of the football culture really fit in with the way football works these days. So I don't. And like I said, I don't know. I'm not anti-Oklahoma drill. Like I said, I did it when I played football.
Well, let's face it. I mean, just everything about football anymore, and even other sports to some extent, is safety. So that's what I mean. I'm sure there were drills that were even tougher than Oklahoma drill way back when. And,
oh, I'm sure.
You know, and then you didn't get water for the next half hour after you, after
yeah,
you did it.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah,
now it's almost like a law that you better have, you know, drinks between every break.
David and Caldwell said they used to practice with the blood alley. I'm not sure what that drill means, but maybe it's something similar.
I guess it's something similar, because an alley would be narrow.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But like I said, I don't know, to me it was just a really fascinating read on the origins of that drill and where it kind of fits in with the way we look at football today and everything. So if you get a chance, go check that out. Like I said, I don't know. It's an interesting conversation of where those kind of things fit in. Is the risk really worth it? I mean, does it really tell you that much about how a guy's going to play on Saturdays? And then, like I said, at the highest levels, they don't even do it anymore. A lot of colleges don't even do it anymore. They were talking about some of them that do, but then again, others don't. I don't know. It's like I said, it's a weird deal. Kind of a where football is heading type of question, I guess, as you look at these sort of things. But more and more, the thing I kept thinking as I was reading it is how more and more, especially in the college and pro levels, the kind of impacts and stuff we see in practice aren't anything like what they are in the game. I mean, they're so different. The speed of the game, the speed people are going, the intensity and that kind of stuff, that it makes it hard to really prepare for those kind of hits. That's one thing, too, that, you know, you want to toughen your guys up, but at the same time, a player on your own team is never going to hit another player on your own team with the same intensity that they're going to hit them out on the field. So is it really even helping, I think, was one of the other questions they kind of bring up.
What you just talked about could be a segue into what you want to talk about later.
Yeah,
with the NFL.
Well,
where they have practices against each other, different teams.
Well, I'll tell you what. Let's move these things around, because that does kind of roll into what I want to talk about there. We'll go to break and come back and talk about this the fights thing. But today, and I think it was Sean Payton, the Saints coach, and I think this even said, I think they even had it on the Sports Flash here, that if they stop putting all the fights on TV, there might not be quite as many. But this goes into that too, as far as the intensity at which people practice. So I want to talk about that when we come back. Send us y'all's thoughts, 229-1939, or maybe drills that y'all did or that the kids still do or anything like that. Whatever y'all want to add, hit us up, 229-1939. But we're going to go to break. We'll come back. We'll talk about fights. Kroom, I know you're excited about that. Aggie Nation powered by the Eagles. Sports Radio 1150 in the Zone FM 102.7.
From News Talk 1620 WTAW, I'm Chelsea Reber with a news update on Sports Radio 1150 and The Zone 102.7 FM. 10 occupants and 24 firefighters escaped injury from a fire at a fourplex in College Station yesterday on Navarro Drive off Welsh, south of Consolidated High School. Battalion Chief Robert Mumford says the cause is under investigation. A combination of heat generated by the fire and winds gusting to 30 miles an hour resulted in damage to an adjacent building and two parked vehicles. A Brazos County jail inmate died yesterday morning. According to Sheriff Chris Kirk, the death of 44-year-old Melvin Earl Jones is believed to be from natural causes. The sheriff says Jones was in a holding cell in the medical department waiting to see the doctor. Jones was taken by ambulance to the hospital where he was pronounced dead. The sheriff says an autopsy will be done along with investigations by his department and the Texas Rangers. The College Station School Board has settled on the size of its next bond issue. Voters will be asked in November to approve nearly $136 million. Superintendent Clark Ely says the district owns land that could be the home of a third middle school, a third intermediate, and a 10th elementary school.
We have one piece of property that is north of Greens Prairie Elementary that you could put an intermediate, middle, or elementary school on. It's big enough for all three of those. Next to Greens Prairie Elementary is big enough for an intermediate or an elementary. And we have one piece of property that's west of Welburn Road and just north of Rock Prairie on Holloman Drive South, and that's big enough for an elementary.
Voters are also being asked for money to buy more land, renovate the current 5th through 8th grade campuses, do deferred maintenance, and buy buses and technology. Details are on our website at WTAW.com. I'm Chelsea Reber on Sports Radio 1150 and The Zone 102.7 FM.
Hello, and thanks for listening to The Bible Minute. The Bible Minute is brought to you by the BCS Church of Christ, located on Highway 30. Feel free to visit us online at bcschurchofchrist.com. That is bcschurchofchrist.com. Oftentimes, men speak about truth as if such does not exist, or as if a person is unable to find and or know the truth. But this is not the way the Bible speaks. In 1 Thessalonians 5:21, the Word of God says, "Prove all things, hold fast that which is good." It seems clear from this verse, along with others, that God expects us to study, examine, and prove, or test, various teachings against the backdrop of God's standard, that is, the Bible. Please don't play games with your soul. Instead, take your Bible and prove or test the teachings of men with the Scriptures. The Bible Minute is brought to you by the BCS Church of Christ, located on Highway 30. Thanks for listening to the Bible Minute.
At Schlitterbahn, there's so much for my family to do, we need a checklist. Miles of slides, rivers, and waves? Check. Plus, Schlitterbahn welcomes picnics and has free parking and tubes. Estimated savings of $100? Check. We also love how we can float the day away and enjoy so much family fun together. Packing our summer with amazing memories? Definitely check. Hold on to every moment at Schlitterbahn.
Get discounted tickets and plan your stay at Schlitterbahn.com.
There is so much happening in Aggie football this fall, you need to be attending the best live show around to stay up to date and on top of all things Aggie football. It happens every Monday and Thursday from noon till 1 at the Tap, and it's called the Belucci Hour. Get recruiting insight from Billy Lucci and Bryce Jones of Texax Radio every week, twice a week this fall. Plus, enjoy the Tap's delicious $7.99 lunch specials with all the bells and whistles. Make the Belucci Hour lunch a part of your week every Monday and Thursday from noon till 1.
Listen to the Astros, the Rangers, the Texans, and of course, the Fightin' Texas Aggies. Your favorite teams play on the Zone FM 102.7 and Sports Radio 1150.
Welcome back. Aggie Nation, powered by the Eagle, Aubrey Bloom, Richard Chrome. All right, we're going to rearrange the show a little bit to go ahead and talk about this, because this is something that's been bothering me lately.
Plus, I keep giving the spoiler.
Well, it's just been annoying me, and that's the fascination or maybe the attention that we give to fights in training camp. And, you know, we talked about this a little bit with Shereen Williams last week, because the Cowboys reported on a fight in their own camp on their own website, almost like they were, you know, excited that this happened. And
their PR and their own fight?
Yeah, well, they kind of were. And that sort of annoys me. And then the thing now, I can tell you right now.
You think they do that because they know it's going to get out anyway? You might as well put it out yourself.
Well, sure. That's part of it, too. Yeah. But that's the whole thing of, you know, fights are going to happen. Look, everyone that's ever played any sport knows there's going to be times, even in your own team, which is what the Cowboys fight was, that, you know, you're going to get heated. You're going to get into it. You're fighting for position every day, and the other guy's being an idiot or whatever, and you just pop off, you hit him one time, and whatever it is. The thing that annoys me is, though, the NFL seems like they're almost setting these things up to happen. And I'll tell you why.
Because there's one a day?
Well, the why, I think, because I can tell you right now, any practice fight I had ever seen or been around or even been involved with back when I played in high school and, like, middle school when I played football, always is not when it's going 11-on-11 full speed. It's when you're going half speed. And someone on the other team's half speed is a little bit more faster than your half speed. So then you think they cheap shot at you. Well, then now you've got to get back at them because there's this whole macho thing that we see all the time. And now it's escalated where both sides are cheap shot each other, and eventually you're going to have a fight. That's the thing I saw on the Hard Knocks episode last week with the Texans and the Redskins, is that that was obviously going to happen. If you try to get professional athletes, but beyond that, guys that have literally grown up, they're machines built to play football, and tell them to go half speed, or what they call it in football, you're not trying to take them to the ground, you're just thump speed, you're just going to hit them, and then you back off. It's going to escalate, and that's what always happens. It's going to happen. So the first thing off, I think the concept of practicing with another team is stupid just from the get-go. Like, what does that possibly add?
Maybe a little intensity, and maybe that's what you want. Maybe.
But then do they need preseason games? I mean, isn't that what preseason games are supposed to be for?
You know, I know where you're going with this. My point of the whole thing is why do they have to show them all the time? Because to me, first of all, rarely does anything come of them. I mean, they're just, you know, I mean, they're like, it's worse than a hockey fight. I mean, the hockey fights are much more intense and brutal and whatever. So it's like, why do they have to be on? Why do they have? I mean, why is the preseason or workouts that boring that we have to? The only thing we can show are fights for them.
Yeah, that's what happened yesterday with the Cowboys and the Rams. Can you name anything else that happened yesterday at the Cowboys practice?
No.
Right, that's all anyone knows about.
Right.
Because they couldn't get it together. And again, this was the same deal. They were in shorts, and they weren't in full pads. They were in shells or whatever. And they were trying to go half speed, and things got, one guy chiefed out of the guy, and it got up and going and all this kind of stuff. And then, like I said, I don't know. And also, everyone's just fascinated with fight videos. If you put a fight video somewhere, people are going to watch it. So I'm with Sean Payton. If they quit showing these things, it wouldn't be as big of a deal. It's going to happen. But my other thing, either you don't need preseason games or you don't need joint practices. You only need one of those things. You don't need both.
Well, if the joint practices are held differently than what you're saying, because like you say, a lot of it, joint practice, the guys aren't going 100%.
Right. Well, that's what I'm saying, though.
But in the preseason game, I guarantee you they're going 100% because there's a lot of guys thinking that's where I'm going to stay on this team. That's how I'm going to get this job.
But that's kind of my point, right? I mean, you either got to go full speed in the joint
Either bring them in for joint practices and go full speed,
or
just wait for the exhibition game.
Yeah, or do away with joint practices and wait for the preseason games. I mean, the whole thing is ridiculous. So that was my whole. Just quit. It's annoying. Like, I want to hear. And again, it goes back to the normal fan doesn't care. Well, for one, even if you did care, even if everyone did care, we don't get access to anything these days enough, maybe an NFL team, to see how their offense has changed, what sort of run schemes are they bringing in, what have the new coaches brought to the fold, how are they changing up how they block, how are they changing up the progressions and on defense, the gaps and the blitzes and all this kind of stuff.
Do you think part of that is a lot of people don't understand all those things? I don't understand half those things.
Yeah, well, that's what I'm getting at.
But you don't need to understand to watch a fight.
That's what I'm getting at. That even if, like, for example, and we would love to write a report on how Christensen has changed A&M's run game or something from what we've seen, but we don't get to see enough practice to do that. And so even if we wanted to, and even if the fans that do understand that stuff wanted to get all that, it's not out there. But I don't think that audience is that big anyway. I don't think the average NFL fan is going to dive into an X's and O's conversation of what the Cowboys are doing. People just get psyched up. They want to cheer, how about them Cowboys, and watch them beat up on some St. Louis Rams. Soon to be LA Rams, probably.
Again.
So, I don't know. It's just one of those things that's annoying. I'm in an annoyed mood today, Kroom. Can y'all, if everyone picked
Sounds
up
like
on
it,
that.
Yeah.
I'm fired up. Just annoyed. Quit doing annoying things.
Well, it's like you said, you know, you don't have it. We're still a week away from the real stuff.
Yeah.
So you kind of might as well pick a different subject, and annoyance is your subject.
Yeah, today. Well, and then just the fighting thing. Quit showing fights. The NFL. But the NFL reporters, like, I think here's
NBA
why.
NBA basketball is like dunks.
I think here's why.
Everything
I think
is
it's
a dunk.
Part jealousy and part being annoyed, because NFL writers do have the access, because they have to see all the stuff at practice and report about all those things. And a lot of them out there doing great work. Shereen Williams, tremendous work, talking about who's in, the depth chart moves, who's injured, who can play what have they seen out of practice, what are the changes the coaching staff's brought in. There's people out there doing that great work, and no one cares. People care about the fights. That's ridiculous. So,
like, the fight is going to get...
So I'm
who's
one.
Be on the team? Who's
so I'm one team? Jealous that NFL writers actually get enough access to be able to write those sort of things, and then two, annoyed that the fans of the NFL don't read those things, instead choosing to read about fights. I don't like it, Krim.
I can understand.
All right, let's go to break. When we come back, we're going to talk about hoops schedules, maybe
something else that annoys you.
Yeah, probably. It probably will be something else that annoys me. This is an annoying Wednesday, is what it is. Well, maybe I'll be in a better mood tomorrow. I don't know. Keep your texts coming. We got a couple. I'll get to after the break. 229-1939. Aggie Nation, powered by the Eagle, here on Sports Radio 1150 in the Zone FM 102.7.
Aggie fans, the Kevin Sumlin Radio Show moves to Rudy's Barbecue on Harvey Road for the 2015 football season. First show on the fall calendar, Tuesday, September 1st, just before the Arizona State game at NRG Stadium in Houston. 1 hour of questions and answers with Coach Sumlin and the fans. First show airs 7 p.m. Rudy's Barbecue on Harvey Road, Tuesday, September 1st. You'll hear it all on the Aggie Radio Network. See you at Rudy's Barbecue, September 1, 7 p.m., the Kevin Sumlin Radio Show.
Every doctor in every field of medicine wants to be a patient's first choice. Every health and wellness professional wants to be a patient's first choice. To make this happen, you first need a partner capable of delivering a powerful marketing message. That partner is Brazos Wellness Magazine, a local publication filled exclusively with local articles. For more information about Brazos Wellness Magazine, contact Brian Broadcasting or email sam@brianbroadcasting.com.
Sweating through another barn burner at your team's bar?
Sure am.
Wish you had some ice-cold refreshment?
You bet.
Then Coors Light may be right for you. Could result in meeting new people, epic fist bumps, epic forearm bumps, epic or chest bumps, touchdown dancing, break dancing, line dancing, dancing like nobody's watching, awesome refreshment, refreshment for the win, and one-of-a-kind Rocky Mountain cold refreshment. Ask your bartender for Coors Light today.
Definitely.
When cold refreshment calls, Coors Light answers. Frost-brewed Coors Light, the world's most refreshing beer. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado. With great beer comes great responsibility.
Water. Every living thing needs it to survive. The Texas economy runs on water, too, to keep our cities working for our hospitals, schools, and businesses. In just one day, a hospital can use up to 350 gallons of water per patient. A single restaurant can use up to 5,800 gallons a day. Water. What would we do without it? The water we conserve today can serve us tomorrow. This important message brought to you by the Texas Water Foundation and the Texas Association of Broadcasters.
At Schlitterbahn, there's so much for my family to do. We need a checklist. Miles of slides, rivers, and waves? Check. Plus, Schlitterbahn welcomes picnics and has free parking and tubes. Estimated savings of $100? Check. We also love how we can float the day away and enjoy so much family fun together. Packing our summer with amazing memories? Definitely check. Hold on to every moment at Schlitterbahn.
Get discounted tickets and plan your stay at Schlitterbahn.com.
Property experts at Selling Lifestyles, Cowell Banker, Agtown Realtors. Find Cowell Banker, Agtown Realtors on Facebook or call us at 846-8400.
Here's a crusty curmudgeon with a country twang tone and a hot sports opinion. It's Olin Sound Off. Olin Sound Off. Tuesdays at 820 on Sports Radio 1150 and The Zone 102.7 FM.
He told her, never will I leave you, my love. No, no, but just as soon as he's gone again, she's a flapping in the wind, wondering what she must have been thinking of. Hey, she's a gone. I've been in and out so many doors.
And welcome back. Aggie Nation, powered by the Eagle. Bloom and Croom, hanging out. I was trying to up my mood during the break watching SMU coach and former guest of the show, Chad Morris, was giving out. The good thing about next week is that's the time of the year that the walk-ons can get scholarships sometimes.
Mm-hmm. So you get a lot of good stories.
Yeah, a team's got a few extra scholarships to hand out, and those videos are always great. Mm-hmm. So I was watching SMU gave out a couple scholarships. I haven't quite got to the good part yet, though, so I'm still annoyed.
But SMU gave already
out a couple? Yeah, they gave a couple out to some guys. And Chad Moore, the coaches always have some elaborate thing they're going to do to let them know that they got it. The Notre Dame one the other day was really good. They had the walk-on model the new jerseys that they're going to wear for the Shamrock series. And so he was already up in front of the team anyway. And then he and Brian Kelly gave him a scholarship. So those videos, that's the good part of the fall lead-up to the season. So those always put you in a better mood. All right, real quick, a couple texts people were talking about. Someone said, why is Dez always fighting? And even better, why fighting with his helmet off? Ask Gino about fighting with no helmet. Oh, yeah, he can't answer because his jaw is wired shut.
Wow.
Yeah, well, again, Dez does seem to be involved all the time.
But don't you think it's part of that is also, it's Dez, but part of that is, people, the other guy knows that because it's Dez, there's a little bit more notoriety in like you said, in getting into a tussle with Dez or something like that.
Yep. Someone else, we're talking about drills. A guy goes, I did the Oklahoma drill as a freshman in high school against a guy that weighed 100 pounds more than me. I told the coach a phrase we can't say here on the show, and enjoyed playing basketball. Football coaches are borderline sadists. Well, and now that's kind of the point. That's kind of the whole point of the article is there's this...
Is there a need for that?
Yeah, there's this whole macho-ness around certain drills in football. That really don't add anything to the game itself. So, I don't know. Like I said, good text. All right, Croom, the hoops schedule comes out tonight. The SEC basketball schedule, not quite to the fanfare of the football schedule every year. Just a step below that, I would say. Yeah. But the thing I was telling somebody,
every team.
Well, there's this SEC basketball Twitter, people that are on Twitter, and me and all these other guys that we talk about SEC basketball, it's off season or whatever. And someone, one of them messaged me like, oh, you haven't seen your tweet, anything about the schedule release tonight. And I was like, well, for A&M fans, the drama this year, no one cares about the conference schedule. They play Baylor and Texas before the year's out, and that's all that matters. And so the conference schedule for A&M this year is really almost an afterthought. I mean, one, they're going to be ranked ahead of all but two teams in the league. Kentucky and maybe Vandy and LSU. Depending on how good you think Vandy is, I've seen them popping up in some top 25. Yeah. So,
they were real young last year.
Yeah, at most three teams will be ahead of them. Like I said, LSU, Kentucky, and Vandy. And then the thing is, no one cares. I mean, around here, there's no, unless Kentucky's coming in, there's no one on that SEC schedule that's going to generate any buzz at all. Right? I mean...
No.
Maybe Florida, only because some fans like their coach. Michael White is now at Florida, right. And I think a lot of fans are interested to see.
Some fans like the old coach, too.
But. Well, and then Bama, where they, if they come to College Station, that'll be a story.
Yeah.
Because Avery Johnson, of course, is there. And now they just got the big five-star to Dallas last week, and there's some stuff there. But and so I was like, no one cares. For A&M and really for Billy Kennedy, all that matters right now, one, you got to beat Texas. I mean, it's weird to boil down a potential 30-something game schedule to one game. But
you think so? Yeah, I think they have to be. I think that they definitely have to go 1-1 against Baylor or Texas.
Yeah, well, yeah. Well,
and, and I think they have to go 2-2 against the Big 12.
Yeah, well, that's kind of the thing. And I'm not talking about if they don't beat them, they're going to fire them midseason. That's not what I'm talking about. But as far
no, I'm not
as,
either. I'm just talking about the feel good for the
yeah,
fans.
Well,
the,
I mean, to pick up the, any momentum.
Yeah, the momentum towards the SEC schedule and or an NCAA bid.
Yeah, I think
you got, we're only talking NCAA bids.
Yeah, and like I said, to get the fans on your side, and I'm not talking about a solid crowd, the 8,000-9,000s that were there last year. I'm talking if you're going to get back to the old days at Reed where there's 12,000-13,000 people there, how many they could pack in, then I think you have to beat Texas. Because if they don't, you either have to beat Texas or beat everyone else. That is kind of where I'm at. Because if you lose, and this goes back to what we talked about.
But see, the one good thing about, well, if you don't beat Texas is that game is so early in the year. It's also while football's going on.
It doesn't matter anything for the tournament. You know, I mean, it could.
Well, I was going
to
say.
It could matter if they beat them, then they get a chance to play Gonzaga. And you beat Gonzaga, who's probably the best team they would have a chance to play in the non-conference. Then it could matter, but it's probably not going to be the make or break. I mean, they play 18 conference games, and they're going to be one of the best three or four teams in the league. So that's going to be really what gets them into the tournament or not.
Look at Georgia. Georgia was the third best team in the league, didn't get in a couple years ago.
Well, and so. That Iowa State game is so late in the year that one's going to be big, too, in late January. And so as far as the tournament, you can there's lots of areas to recover. But I'm talking about if you're trying to get back to where fans are lining up to get into Reed Arena, you want, you know, 12,000 people. I think they have to beat Texas or, like I said, beat literally everyone else.
I kind of agree with you there in that I've heard a lot about – remember when Texas just demolished A&M here a few years back? And all the by the time the game was over, the A&M fans had left and all the Texas fans had come down to the front and were, you know, cheering on their team and getting all excited and all that stuff. And a lot of people have pointed this out to me, and I believe them. Since that time, that's when the crowds started really diminishing. I thought they were diminishing a little bit before that, but that was almost like a punch to the gut. That one was.
Well, and I also
think the fans in the stands.
A&M fans will forgive your past problems if it looks like you're turning the corner. I mean. You know, if it looks like you're about to make a big move. And so I think if they were to beat Texas and then, you know, have a decent non-conference, I think the fans could buy into Billy Kennedy. But here the thing, it's not so much that it's Texas. I mean, it is. That's part of it. But the other part of it is it's a first-year coach at Texas on a Texas team that, frankly, wasn't very good last year. They made the tournament, but barely. And this is a – if you're –
So in other words, you're saying if they don't beat them now, they may never beat them.
Well, they probably won't play them that often, it's more of just about what that would mean. I mean, if Billy Kennedy in year five, right, with the best roster he's put together. I mean, we've heard for 2 years that this is the year everything's supposed to come together.
You've got a
massively upperclassman laden roster. You got all kinds of seniors, which no college teams have these days.
Yeah.
If you can't beat Texas,
no major college teams.
Yeah, if you can't beat Texas with the first year coach in the second week of the season, then.